coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
We're talking voice in AI with voiceover artist Casey Logan, who's using AI to clone her voice.
They're not going to hire a voiceover artist for that.
Gayanne Potter, who is currently in a battle to take down her AI voice.
Will you give her a voice back, please? They refused. Unfortunately, Reed Speaker have picked on the wrong person.
And legendary voice of The X Factor, Peter Dixon.
It was an unmitigated disaster.
An AI challenge. Can we tell the difference between a real person and an AI voiceover?
Oh, well, hello, and welcome to AI Haven't a Clue. We are the podcast that looks at the wild, sometimes murky, occasionally technicolor waters of artificial intelligence. And this is the introduction, as some like to call it, James, where we would usually introduce ourselves. But seeing as we have got one of the UK's most legendary voices, Peter Dixon, voice of The X Factor, on the podcast today, I think maybe we should do X Factor style intros.
I can tell you're dying to do it.
I kind of am. Do you remember, though, and for any slightly younger listeners, you may not, but everyone else will remember when they would have a big guest on The X Factor and they would do like the big stats, you know, be like 400 million records sold. What are we doing for yours? What's the stat that's coming into yours? I mean, it's got to be something about how you are, you know, an AI expert.
It could be that. I got called Smooth and Confident by Miranda Sawyer. Could be that.
I mean, it's pretty cool. Are you going to do your Peter Dixon impression of yourself?
George, you can do both of them. Yeah, okay, 100%.
Okay. This isn't AI, by the way.
He's smooth and confident. Chief Strategy Officer, James Chandler.
What do we think of that?
Yeah, it was good.
That wasn't a voice clone. So I'm not going to do myself. Hi, I'm George. Terrible, terrible impressionist. And a clueless idiot when it comes to AI, but learning more as every week passes. And today specifically, we will be going into the really interesting space of AI and voice with a trio of voiceover artists, three of them. Casey Logan, who is using AI to clone her voice, Gayanne Potter, who is currently in a battle to take down her AI voice, and legendary voice of The X Factor, Peter Dixon. Plus, of course, James, we will have a big question. Are you ready for our big listener question this week?
Yes, born ready for the listener question. Not the thing that gets me out of bed, though. AI challenge for me.
Ooh.
It sort of brings out the best and worst in me. Is it going to be a real person? Is it going to be an AI voiceover?
And of course, don't forget, if you would like to ask James a question, make it a tricky one. Why not? Drop us an email, aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. Or if you head to LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, we're there. And you can leave us a comment. James, where else can you find us?
Get us on the Substack.
Substack. Yes, we love Substack. Okay, that's all on the way. Let's dive in right now, though, with this week's big news stories from the world of AI. So let's jump straight in with news which is very relevant ahead of the guests we're welcoming onto the show later about Fortnite. So Fortnite are facing a complaint from the Actors Union after they have used an AI Darth Vader. What's going on?
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. It's bang on given the conversation that we're going to have with Casey later on. So SAG-AFTRA, which are the Actors Union in the States, they filed a complaint against Epic Games. So Epic Games are the makers of Fortnite. They used AI to recreate Darth Vader's voice in Fortnite. They didn't inform the union, so there were sort of kind of no terms negotiated there. Unions, by the way, as you will come on to hear from Casey, are a really, really big deal in the States with actors, and particularly around this area.
So they basically used AI to make an impersonation of Darth Vader without the right permissions. And this is, it's quite interesting because, you know, obviously the technology is available now for people to do that. You know, you can imitate Darth Vader or Mickey Mouse or whoever it may be. Are there IP laws in place to stop this, or is it purely an actors' union point of view where the issue lies?
Well, it's still the union point at the moment. I mean, the interesting thing around permission, the web gets thicker here. They actually Epic did get approval from the estate of James Earl Jones, who of course originally voiced Darth Vader. So they've said that it's kind of fine to use. It's the union who have the issue here. So again, this whole debate around usage, it's really, really layered. Probably needs someone to come out and regulate and say, well, you can do this and you need to seek the permission of this person, or you need to do it in this way. At the moment, people just don't have clarity. Hence, you're ending up with complaints like this being filed.
And obviously, as the technology rapidly gets better, you're going to have more and more of these issues. A week or so ago, Elton John called the government morons, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, because that sounds like him.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's not happy because, in a very similar way, he doesn't feel there's protection for his brand, his voice, his IP. But yeah, I guess the interesting part here is that the James Earl Jones estate ultimately gave approval, and that's where things get messy.
Yeah, that's where it's got really complicated. You've got one side saying, and this was kind of set up. This is his original voice. You can use it. The union saying, no, hang on, we're trying to protect all actors here. And what they really don't want to do is set some sort of precedent whereby they don't go via the union negotiated properly. And not just about money and compensation either. It's kind of like once the toothpaste is out of the tube on this, it's going to be impossible to put back in. So they really want to get it right.
Sounds like they need to get these deals in place ASAP. Mm. Otherwise, as you said, things are going to be in a place where you can't bring it back.
Very much so.
Right, let's move on now to Apple. They're thinking, James, AI is going to kind of spur a new level of creativity in developing apps.
Yeah, you're right. Apple are going to let their developers start to build out with lots of the AI-powered features. So their big developers conference, which is happening in about a week's time, where they get everyone together and they kind of announce to the world what's going to be available. There's a whole new software development kit with lots and lots of AI goodies in there that developers will be able to get their hands on for the first time.
And what's the aim here? What are they looking to do?
The real thing here is that clearly a company like Apple don't want to be left behind. You can see all the advancements. We've talked lots about ChatGPT, about Gemini, Perplexity, Grok, which is obviously Elon's take on AI. Lots and lots of stuff is happening. Apple don't want to get left behind. So there's a kind of a competitiveness play here. They need to put these AI tools into the hands of developers so they can kind of keep up with this arms race in AI, if you like. And don't forget, you've got other people as well, not just the ones that are building those things, but some of the handset manufacturers. Their biggest competitor is Samsung when it comes to the actual devices. So everyone's playing this game. Apple don't want to be left behind.
Can I go off on a slight tangent here? Grok.
Yeah.
Is Grok the thing people are like, ask Grok?
Yes, that's exactly it.
So it's basically you ask it on X and it just comes up with the answer in the replies. Is that what Grok is?
Yeah, precisely. So it goes back to Elon's whole thought with X, which is that he wants it to be this everything app. So everything you do is in this. You don't need to download a separate Grok app. It just happens within Twitter. When you look to somewhere like China, they have their everything apps, and within them you do payments, you have the AI, you kind of ask it stuff. And if you kind of look at everyone, that's what everyone's trying to do. You have this one app on your phone, whether it's powered by Google or by Apple or it's X. They're all trying to do this kind of everything thing. So yeah, with Grok, you just ask it in the feed and it tells you or creates an image, whatever it
might
be.
Are these tech giants competing against each other? Or is there a place for Zuckerberg, Google, Elon Musk to have their own mini ecosystem?
Yeah, they're all going to be competing against each other, but you know, they're competing each other and have been for a long time on lots of things, on hardware, on software, on people in Silicon Valley. So this will be no different. We talk a lot at the IB about a rising tide that floats all boats. There will be some things that are common to all of them, which make sense for them to collaborate on. Not entirely sure what they might be yet. But, you know, whether it's standards or how we'd start to define things, it could be around self-regulation. So there'll be some things they come together on. They kind of agree, actually, if we all agree on this thing, it's good for all of us. But, you know, they are competitors and this stuff does make them money.
I mean, given their track record, I'm hoping also it's not just them deciding these things, but there's something that sits above them.
100%.
That's getting involved.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our final story now, James. So the CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, doesn't listen to podcasts, but instead, just tell us, because this story is so weird. I want it to come out of your lips.
It's not great news for AI Haven't a Clue, because, Satya Nadella isn't listening to our podcast, maybe like many of our listeners are. He came out in an interview and said he's using Copilot, which is Microsoft's AI. He uploads the podcast transcripts to Copilot, and then he talks to it. In his car. He has discussions about it, so he asks it questions. So he's kind of interrogating it. Not enough to listen to it anymore. You've got AI.
Satya sounds weird. I'm sorry. You know what? Sometimes you could just put on a podcast and listen and enjoy it. Like, what's he interrogating his podcast for? Also, Who's he interrogating? What, he's interrogating the AI chatbot about a podcast recorded by someone else?
I hope he's interrogating. We should get him on and interrogate you. That would be fantastic.
I would interrogate. I'm sure he's a very smart person, but also a bit weird.
There's loads of stuff, other things that he revealed in the interview. He said he utilises at least 10 custom AI agents, all developed in Copilot, of course, to handle a whole bunch of tasks. So things like summing up emails, preparing for meetings, all that kind of mundane admin-y stuff. He's got AI and Copilot specifically all over it. He talked about himself as an email typist. He's basically got AI doing everything.
Does he think he's Tony Stark?
Does he think...
Can you not just see him in his like mansion with like all his AI bots like talking to him?
And coming back to your point on code, Microsoft also came out and said, and Satya confirmed, Microsoft reports that AI now writes approximately 30% of its code. So the Sergey Brin example that we talked about, he's kind of having to come back to keep up with it. Microsoft's already got the AI on it.
So 30% of what Microsoft code is... just bots.
Written by AI. Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Right, moving on. It's time now for our question this week, which of course comes from a lovely listener. If you have a question you'd like to ask, make it tough, make it difficult, make it extremely complex, and then maybe I'll pick it and James can have a go at answering it. Libby has sent us this week's question, and it's a tricky one. James, are you ready?
Yeah, this is going to be a tricky one, isn't it?
So Libby would like to know, what might the impact be on people and society when AI inevitably wipes out certain job roles? Big one.
First thing, I would slightly question the inevitability of it all. There was a wonderful example that someone within the AI context told me about, and they used the example of designers, people who design homes, that kind of thing. And it was thought when computer-aided design, CAD, came in, so the idea that architect could start to build these things on computer rather than write them down, it would just wipe out architects completely. Of course it hasn't. It's just made their job a lot easier. They can do a lot more advanced things. And I actually think that's going to be the impact on people, the impact on society is, it's just going to empower us to do so many more things. Or it's going to replace the stuff, the admin-y stuff that takes us lots of time, and actually maybe free us up to be more strategic or more thoughtful or more mindful about stuff.
But when AI does come in, and it will take layers, it does look like it's going to take layers of job roles away.
Yeah.
That does look like it's happening. And we're seeing already some companies begin to make people redundant and replace them with AI. That's already happened. It may happen more so in the coming years. When it comes to freeing people up, I mean, if you are essentially losing a layer of jobs that people had, what are they going to do? What, when you say, you know, they will be doing things that might be more strategic.
Yeah.
Might it be the case that there are people who, you know, they haven't been working at that level and it is just wiping out kind of a level of jobs that do currently exist? What then?
Well, the businesses will always have ambitions to do other things. They'll always have some sort of strategy whereby this is the stuff that we want to do today. Maybe here's the things that we want to do tomorrow. Inevitably, the stuff that you want to do tomorrow always takes time or resource or people. Like, you're suddenly going to have a whole bunch of people who you could retrain to do certain things. They could contribute to the business in slightly different ways. I mean, for me, the bit that AI is probably going to replace in terms of jobs are the things that people don't get a huge amount of joy in doing anyway. If it could do timesheets and expenses and boring stuff and find free time in my calendar, which I abhor and I'm not very good at, that would be great. And I can do more of the exciting strategic stuff, which I do get lots of energy of and enjoy. It's not a perfect answer. I get that, Libby. And inevitably, there will be casualties. There will be jobs that just won't exist anymore. But, you know, maybe there's going to be brand new jobs that are going to be created through AI as well.
And it is a huge question. And it's the sort of question that we will come back to tackle time and time again in the stories that we cover and the guests that we have on. So, Libby, thank you for asking it.
Yeah, thanks, but I wouldn't mind an easier one next week.
Don't count.
Does that mean I get an easy one?
Absolutely not. They're getting harder every week. Right, if you've got a question, extra tough, can you be harder than Libby's? That's the competition. Get in touch. AIHavingAClue@gmail.com is the email, or leave us a comment on any of our social platforms on TikTok, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Okay, it is now time to have a deep dive into the world of voice in AI. And we're joined by three different guests. They've all got kind of different views. They're all going through different things with AI in voice, but they're all professional voiceovers. with differing views on AI in this space.
Yeah, three completely different scenarios, really. First up, we talked to legendary voice of the X Factor, Peter Dixon. Second, and very, very current, Gayanne Potter. She's one of the most recognisable voices in the UK. She's worked on ads for B&Q, Apple, Estee Lauder, to name a few. She's got a very, very different approach. Her voice is currently being used as a clone on Scottish Rail, which is just dominating the news at the moment. And we talked to Casey Logan. She's an audiobook narrator, very, very passionate about human emotion, and a slightly more cautious embrace of AI, I would say, George.
We spoke to Gayanne a couple of days ago. It's fascinating. It's a wild, wild case that's going on. But before we get there, we're chatting to Peter Dixon. Well, Peter, hello. You know, you've been a defining voice in British entertainment for decades, and obviously people know you from shows like The X Factor and literally voicing Saturday nights for tens of millions of people. So it's so lovely to have you on to talk a little bit about voice. And obviously this show is all about the AI world. So when did AI first land on your radar as kind of an element in your line of work?
Well, it must have been, I think, probably about 3 years ago now, maybe slightly earlier than that. It had been talked about. We, you know, were immediately freaked out by the whole idea because it's what I do for a living. It's what thousands of people around the world do for a living. And so it was seen initially as an immediate threat to our livelihoods and our creativity. But as time marched on, and I did more research, we all really piled into it to try and understand what this existential threat may be. And it got to the point about a year ago where I engaged with three AI companies to create a model of my own voice, which I did. It took about 3 weeks. I had to provide a significant amount of speech to them in a file in a certain format. And then about 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, they came back and said, "Your model is ready." I thought, "Oh, this is fantastic." Because actually, George, I know many of us had this same feeling about AI. My feeling was, as I've just explained, at first revulsion and horror and apprehension. And on the other hand, I had this feeling of, wow, this might be something really exciting. But the key is that we must retain control, and control is the key word. So anyway, I got these models back and I played with them text to speech, speech to text, and it was an unmitigated disaster. It sounded nothing like me, and there was nothing about any of these three models that captured what we now call the nuance in the human voice. You know, when you listen to a really good audiobook narrator, say, whereas the AI robot doesn't have that. And I would challenge anybody to get past one chapter of a book read by a robot. It's just so robotic. And now where we're at is in a slightly different place. I think we've all realized as voice actors that AI is not going to be the immediate job-killing, career-ending threat that it once may have seemed to be, which is great. And the reason for that is because we are now becoming, as voice actors, more aware of that threat, and we are now upskilling our abilities to become more human and more nuanced in our deliveries. I think, if I'm being frankly honest with you, there are some areas of voiceover that will disappear to the robot and have already gone. I'm talking about explainer videos on the internet, telephone systems, IVR systems, where the quality of the voice, it's informational. We don't really need to hear the nuance as such. But things like, as I mentioned, audiobooks, animation, commercials, live events, those kind of things are going to always be, in my view, unless our AI ups its game, significantly going to be done by human beings.
And are you surprised at the pace of these things? Conversational AI now, you can still kind of feel it out, but you are able to have a reasonably good conversation with AI, and it kind of talk back to you with some of that cadence and tone and nuance. Are you surprised at how fast it's moving?
Yes. I mean, it is frighteningly fast. And as I said, it will get better as time goes on, because that's the nature of progress in technology. I've heard a conversation between two AI models, and it was quite frighteningly real. They even had fillers in their conversation, so they do and well. The thing is, you see, so that those little human touches make it sound human, but there's still something about the quality of the voice. To me, anyway, I work in this area, but I know it's not real, so I would be not prepared to listen to an audiobook read by a robot.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned selling your voice as such, licensing it out to AI. What's involved in that?
Well, my idea was, and why I got very excited was because I thought if I create this model, right, and then I would be the license holder of that model, and the model would exist on the platform that I had engaged and contracted to, then I could sit on a beach in Hawaii, excuse me, or somewhere like that, with a nice glass of something cold in my hand, with a laptop on my knee, and scripts, requests for my voice would come in on a daily basis, and I would review the script and either approve it or not approve it. And then I'd get the usage and I'd say, right, that's the rate, it's going to be that. And the money would drop into my bank account and we'd all go home happily ever after. So that's the nirvana that we all thought was going to happen.
But what you're telling me, Peter, is that AI cannot say Rachel Adedeji as well as you can. Is that the short of it?
Yeah, I mean, six syllables have always been very difficult for robots. They can't, like Daleks can't handle the stairs. Robots can't handle six syllables, which is just as well because Rachel Adedeji is a wonderful name to say.
There'll be a generation of people now who could grow up and never really care, enjoy, savour those kind of natural voices that perhaps, you know, I certainly grew up listening to. Is that a worry, do you think, that this kind of synthetic voice becomes the norm? And much of the argument about AI, whether it's written or we hear it, is it's the kind of sameness stuff. It all just kind of just sounds the same.
I think it's the sameness of it and the predictability of the delivery. I think it's going to be quite a long time until the AI models can replicate real sounding human voices. But I still think, you know, at the end of the day, we are going to have to decide whether we as humans want to be dominated and listen to, robot voices, or whether we want to watch plays, listen to dramas. I think at the end of the day, we are going to demand that human beings are still at the end of a microphone.
Peter, is there a split in the industry, you know, amongst your colleagues and contemporaries? Is there a split in terms of people going, you know what, I accept this is coming, I may not love it, but I'm going to embrace it. And the people that go, I don't want anything to do with this, you're not cloning my voice, you're not having my, you know, my IP, essentially.
They're all divided in certain extent. Some people don't want to know anything about it. Other people have embraced it and created their own voice model. I know one voice actor in America who's quite cleverly used her voice model to do all her auditioning for her, which is quite interesting. So I think we've got to embrace it, but at the same time, we've got to control it. And that's where I go back to where we started, where I said control is the key.
In terms of the way that you've gone about working with AI, would you always have to give permission for people to use your AI voice clone? Or is it done in a way in which anyone might be able to use it without you actually having to go, you're good to go?
Well, look, they can do that already. I mean, I must have thousands of hours of material out there publicly available on the internet. Anyone with any nous could create a voice model of anybody whose voice was recorded and they had enough samples of it. So I'm not naive enough to think that people could use AI to create my voice or someone else's voice and use it for commercial purposes. That, of course, has happened. It happened to Stephen Fry, where something that he knew he didn't record popped up and was for sale somewhere. I think it was an audiobook, actually. He was very annoyed about that, got it taken down. But we have to be very vigilant of these things and work out a way of how we can all be fairly compensated if we're going to use AI in a fair and constructive way, not just the Wild West, which exists. The other thing I would say, though, is that I've heard quite clearly over the last, say, 6 months or so, of many, many clients using AI voices on their projects, and they've stopped using them. They're coming back to real voices. The reason being is that there's been rejection of the stuff. It's not been good enough. It's taking them far too long to tweak the audio. They have to do a lot of work to make the thing sound right. So I think we're seeing now clients who had been tempted to use AI now coming back to using real live voices, which is encouraging.
Do you think there is a danger that, you know, actually as AI voice clones get better and better, we end up in a place where we continually turn to the past or even the present? So, you know, a new hit song is given to Elvis to sing. And, you know, Chris Evans hosts a breakfast radio show for the next century. And Peter Dixon is voicing ads 200 years in advance.
I wouldn't mind that.
I'm not saying people wouldn't mind it. And I think that's probably part of the potential issue. Is it going to get in the way of a new generation of creative talent?
Well, I think that's, I mean, what you've just described, I could absolutely see as a video or audio channel, and I would listen to it because there is a certain nostalgia about hearing voices from our past doing new stuff, and it's fascinating to us. But I don't see it taking over the whole of creativity in human beings, because otherwise we all become redundant, and then what do we do? You know, you get out of bed in the morning to do what exactly?
Last one from me, Peter. You talked about young actors coming through. What advice would you give young voice actors who are kind of coming into the industry now?
If I was starting out now, I think it would be very concerning. And I'm concerned for young voice actors now who look at this whole thing, and they are genuinely worried about it, and rightly so. It always has been competitive. The industry changes, interestingly, all the time. Trends come and go a lot. So I would say find a genre that you're attracted to, be it animation, video games, audiobooks, commercials, whatever it might be. Listen to the best in the business and then get some training. Gravy for the Brain is the company I've run for the last 15 years. And we are by far, I think, the biggest voice acting training academy on the planet. It's all online, and we've trained something like 65,000 people to become voice actors over that period of time. I think there's nothing better that you can do to further your career than really getting some good training under your belt. Listening, become an avid consumer, and just kind of practice, practice, practice. I call it the three P's, and there's no substitute for it.
Gravy for the Brain is, as you said, the place to go for voice training, and it's been lovely to chat with you about this, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you both. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, what an absolute legend. Thank you so much, Peter Dixon. Right, we are moving on now to something very topical. You may have seen this in the news this week. Gayanne Potter, a brilliant voiceover artist, has had her voice cloned without her realising. This is a huge, huge story. And it's scary, but fascinating.
Yeah, a really live story at the moment. As you said, I mean, we only talked to her a couple of days ago, and this is moving really, really quickly. She's a voiceover artist. You'll probably recognise her from the bunch of stuff that she's been in. But let's hear from her. Here's Gayanne Potter.
And before we go any further, can we start by hearing your story about AI voice and how you came to find your voice clone being used without your knowledge?
Absolutely. Well, it started in 2019 when I was first approached by a company called ReadSpeaker to do a TTS model. And I didn't know what TTS was. You know, back then, tech wasn't, you know, anywhere near. I said, oh, it's a text-to-speech. All right, okay. So we had a chat for a bit and then they disappeared. They then came back in 2021 and said, you know, we really like your voice. We're looking for a Scottish voice for our voice model that's going to be used for accessibility. You know, it's dead boring. It's for, like, you know, if people have visual impairments or if people just want a document read out to them rather than read it, you know, it's not exciting stuff. So I put it to my agent, and an agent, you know, kind of dealt with it, and the contract came through, and I said, oh, there's a few things in there I'm a bit scared of. Just, you know, this is my job and I don't want to give away my job. So we had a clause put in that said if there was a forward selling of, you know, my voice and the data of my voice, the rights of it, then I would have to be given the opportunity to give my kind of informed written consent. Now, I understood that to be if you sell my voice to somebody, out with holding it on your website, your ReadSpeaker website, purely for spitting out documentation, which is what I understood we were talking about, that you would let me know. Because as a professional voice actor, why on earth would I do that? So we that was that, did the job. It was an hourly rate, which was a minimal hourly rate. And I thought I was doing something helpful. And then 2 years later, a producer got in touch with me who was trawling the internet to see there was a lot of cloning going on, a lot of data scraping going on. And she got in touch and said, look, I work with you all the time. I think this Iona, it sounds like it's you. I basically went to look at it, was horrified. It was on their website in a very commercial way. I approached them and said, this is not the deal. They said, oh, we'll phone you, have a chat, reassure you. And their reassuring line was, it doesn't really sound that great. It's probably not going to take your work. Don't worry about it. I said, that's not the point. So I then got a lawyer to speak with them and say, look, can we please reassess this situation? And they shut down. They said, we have a contract. We own your voice. Go away, basically. We then said, okay, look, you've had 2 years of Gian's voice. You've had more than fair use of it, given what you paid for it, more than fair use. Can we just, you know, say enough's enough? She wants her voice data back. Can you please take it off your site? They refused. We then approached them with, what if Gian pays back what you paid her for her voice? Will you give her a voice back, please? They refused. We then went down the GDPR route because it's my biometric data. I own my biometric data. And a full and comprehensive complaint was submitted to the ICO. They took a few months to get back. And in February of this year, they replied saying, because Reed Speaker's offices are in Sweden and that's where they're registered, it would need to be taken up to fall under Swedish jurisdiction and we'd need to go to a Swedish court of law. Unfortunately, Reed Speaker have picked on the wrong person. We're gonna do this. We're gonna go through the European route. Cut to last week, I was sitting in my house and a producer I worked with sent me a WhatsApp and said, have you seen this article on the BBC? This is you, right? And I opened up the article and it was the BBC's reporting of ScotRail's new AI voice, what do you think, kind of thing. And the public sort of going, it's a horrible AI model. And it is, it's dreadful. The public rightly so is. But as soon as I opened it and I saw this flame-haired avatar, my stomach dropped. The name Iona, I felt sick. I thought, oh my God, please no. Then I played the video and I heard myself say, please mind the gap when alighting from this train. And I thought, oh my God. I alerted the BBC at midnight and I said, guys, this is not cool. That's how the media kind of storm started. Now lots of colleagues, friends, even people that know me in the community have come forward and said, yeah, we've been hearing that for weeks, but we just assumed that it was a job you did for ScotRail, because in Scotland, I'm everywhere. Selling my voice isn't the issue. I'm everywhere. And if people said to me, oh, I heard you in B&Q, oh, I heard you in Scotland, you know, it would be just nonsense to say that because it's my job.
Oh, I see.
So nobody thought to say. They just all assumed, oh, Jan's working for ScotRail.
If you could go back in time, and, you know, bearing in mind that, you know, you recorded this material for them during the pandemic, so yes, a long time ago, what do you think you might have done differently, you know, given what you know now? What assurances would you have wanted, or what clarity? Or it just felt like that whole setup was really ambiguous and it wasn't made clear to you.
Ambiguous is absolutely the right word. They did a lot of conversations on the phone and were exceptionally warm, friendly, fuzzy, you know, don't worry, and oh, you're great at this, and oh my God, you're so fast at your job, and all this kind of stuff. And let's be honest, you mentioned the pandemic again, but, you know, that's really important because we were dealing with bigger fish right then than we were dealing with, you know, AI technology. We were worried about, were we going to survive? Was I going to be continuing to work? Ultimately, that's what the focus of everybody's life was at that point. And if I could go back, COVID aside, there's nothing I would look at myself and say, do you know what, Gian, you should have done that. Nothing. Even when the contract was first brought through, I asked questions. So given everything, all the reassurance, the verbal reassurance, the email reassurance, I did everything I think I could have done at the time.
I'd be interested to know, what would you say to fellow peers in the voice sector, and we've spoken to some others, what would you say to them about their embrace of AI and voice?
I'm not anti-AI. I think AI has an amazing potential to help people in so many ways. It's the unethical use of AI that I am so angry about. But I would say, if as a voice artist you feel that you have been misrepresented or misinformed, you must revisit these contracts, because there are some laws that will protect you. There are ethical companies out there, unlike, I believe, ReadSpeaker. You have control over it. You have given them the consent to use it. It's GDPR protected, and they will talk with you about customers when they want to purchase it. You are properly remunerated for that. That's ethical use of AI, in my personal opinion. It's enhancing life for so many people, and that's a good thing. What it shouldn't do is compromise anybody, and it should never take away somebody's livelihood that they could do probably better than the AI could. There is nothing that AI voice model could say that a voice artist couldn't say and wouldn't say better. And legislation needs to be brought in my opinion, that protects us. I've had so many messages from in the past 24 hours from people I don't even know, voice artists around the world I have never met, who've said to me, I've had my voice stolen.
This is fraudulent. I mean, it does sound like there's one thing having a contract, but there's another thing not understanding the implications of where things will go 2, 3, 4, 10 years later in that case. It's astounding. Have you heard from Scott Rail yet?
I've had absolutely no communication from them. Nobody's reached out to see if I'm okay. Nobody's reached out to say, we're really sorry this has happened to you. You know, we bought this voice model in good faith. Their response to the press up until, you know, 24 hours ago, I've not been informed otherwise, was, this is between Gayanne and ReadSpeaker, and we have no plans to remove her from our trains. I have an email from ReadSpeaker in 2023, and I said, what about third-party use? Like, this is horrific. And their email to me said, if you have an issue with a third-party use, you take it up with the third party. They're blaming each other.
Got it. Look, you talked about a wild last 24 hours. You've sort of become this poster child for this. What happens next, Gayanne?
I'm going to put a little post out just to thank everybody, and then I'm going to take just a little bit of rest for myself. But my legal team and Equity and the Equity Audio Committee have all been putting our heads together. We can only hope between now and then that Scott Rail do the right thing. But, you know, there's several ways they can go. They can either apologise to me and remove my voice, apologise to me and hire me to do the job. You know, there's a voice artist that was doing it for 20 years before me. Put her back on. There was nothing wrong with it, you know. I don't expect to hear from ReadSpeaker, because as of yesterday, my agent emailed kind of a what on earth email to them, and was met with effectively just go away. And I have been asked to appear on television next week to talk about this to a much wider audience. So that's the plan next week.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Good luck, Gayanne. And thank you for jumping on with us as well. I mean, it sounds like a bit of a torrid 24 hours, but it's really good to hear that, you know, Equity are on side. You've got a great legal team, and it's very good to hear that people have kind of reached out, even people you don't know, just to, you know, you don't feel like you're on your own in this thing. Yeah, I mean, just wow, really. I mean, I'd read this story, as I think a lot of people would have, on the BBC, but I had no idea, you know, how she's been treated by ReadSpeaker. The response as we record it, we didn't read anything from Scott. I mean, it's kind of staggering, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and I tell you the thing that I think is most scary. It's not that someone's entered into a contract recently knowing exactly what AI in the voice space is and then backed out of it at the last minute, because you could see the argument for why, you know, you've signed the deal and you've got to move on. But it's the voiceover artists who several years ago, before they knew where this technology was going, has recorded things, and several years down the line, they're facing a much different and changed industry, and I think that's very, very scary. We're gonna chat to one more voiceover artist now, who kind of has an opinion which sits somewhere in between what we've heard. But Casey Logan does actually have a voice clone which is available to buy. Casey endorses it and has a slightly different view to Gayanne. Let's take a listen to what happened when we caught up with Casey. Casey, hi. Thank you so much for joining us. So I want to start by talking about narrative AI, because I know it's something that you're involved with. So I would love to know, what is it and what made you decide to get into it?
So when it comes to narrative AI, since it's the only SAG-AFTRA approved voice modeling virtual company, I know that SAG-AFTRA has my back. I know that I will be fairly compensated as an actor if I choose to take a contract through narrative. And it gives me control. And it also says it's sending a message to those who are developing virtual voice models. The more people that sign up through SAG-AFTRA contracts, it's sending the message that we as voice actors want this technology to take us into consideration. I mean, there's so much with AI when it comes to ethics and compensation, and are virtual voices better than human voices? No, probably not when it comes to acting, although as the technology improves, I'm sure there will be applications where an AI voice model might be the better choice in some situations when nuance and depth or human energy isn't necessarily needed.
In terms of AI using your voice, if someone wanted to use the AI Casey, What have they got? How could they do that? And what has been taken from your voice to be used?
Well, honestly, at this point in time with narrative AI, they allow you to upload a few different voice models of your voice. So you can have happy, smooth, you can even do different accents in there. Again, it does not sound completely human yet, but it's an emulation of my voice, and it takes some of the timbre, some of the tone, some of the pitch, and it puts it in there. It's not going to be Casey acting like you would get if you hired me to narrate an audiobook or if you hired me to do a commercial, but it will be the timbre and quality of my voice that you can get. And I get to be fairly compensated, and I also get to have control and say, ooh, no, I do not want to do a political commercial. So I have control on my end to accept or reject any contract that comes by. And I think a lot of us voice actors are very hesitant to put our voice models out there because so many places, once you put your voice model out there, you don't necessarily have control of what happens to it. Right now with narrative, I have complete control, and that is why I am comfortable putting my voice out there. I also do not have it associated with my name. If you hire Casey Logan, you get Casey Logan, the actor. If you go to my profile on narrative, I have that under a completely different name because it's not me.
Oh.
It's my voice model, which I view as different.
What would you care to? You don't have to tell us your AI name.
I believe, and it's so funny that you asked that. I keep forgetting. I chose Addison Engel.
Nice.
And the reason why I chose Engel, that's like a surname that goes back in my family. But I chose the first name Addison simply because it starts with A.
So Addison Engel, I get it. I'm a bit slow, Casey, but I got there eventually. Yeah, right, very good.
You talked about audiobooks, which I think is fascinating. You know, the idea of listening to an AI voice read me a 7-hour audiobook feels tough. That there are other instances, I guess, I kind of think about, you know, when you get put on hold when you're on a phone call or something like that. Can you think of instances where actually an AI replicated voice might kind of do?
Honestly, when it comes to an AI virtual voice versus an actor, I truly believe there's a lot of intangibles there. If you need human energy, a virtual voice just isn't going to do. If you need human emotion, a virtual voice isn't going to do. Voice modeling that has a lot of those shades of gray and nuances, of course, is going to be better. So the computer is putting out this facsimile of a human voice. It's trying to sound completely human, but it doesn't sound completely human. There's mispronunciations. The longer the project, the more little things, the more distortions almost to the humanity that you're going to hear. And then on the back end, now you have to have somebody who's willing to do the engineering to go back through and fix the mispronunciations and fix the distortions and fix the itty bitty little glitches like, you know, generator. Okay, so technically that's pronounced correctly, but generator is not how we say it. So now you've got to go on the back end if you don't want it to sound uncanny valley and fix it. My thought is, if you want it to sound like a human voice and you are using a virtual voice, you can make a shorter project sound more like a human voice, because the human end of things now is the producer. We're not a voice actor anymore. We've got a producer coming in and they're changing and they're tweaking and they're getting it to sound just how they want it to, and get rid of those little distortions that happen with the virtual voice.
You know, you clearly have an eye on the future. You see AI as something that has potential. Where do you see this technology going? And ultimately, where is it going to leave the future of voiceover?
I sincerely hope there will be two different aspects to voiceover in the future. One is the artistry side of voiceover. And I will fully admit, I think a producer can do things on the backside and bring human artistry into a 100% virtual voice. Personally, I think a voice actor can do it faster, cheaper, and quicker. That's where the technology is now. But I hope that there will always be artistry in voiceover. Casey Logan still wants to work. Casey Logan still wants to act. But as the technology improves, I'm okay if Addison Engel brings in some money. And I'm okay for those things that don't require that depth of passion or nuance, or maybe somebody's just saying, buy now. I'm okay if I make 50 cents for every view that gets. You know, there is a subset of people that if they just need a quick little audio clip that says, act now to get the best deal, they're not going to hire a voiceover artist for that. But they might pay me a little bit over on narrative AI. And I'm okay with that, as long as that is not replacing the artistry over here.
Well, Casey, it's been fascinating exploring this topic with you and hearing more from your side of things. And it's been lovely chatting. Thank you so much for joining us on AI Having a Clue.
Thanks, Casey.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Three very, very different perspectives, but fascinating to hear a viewpoint on this issue, isn't it, James?
Yeah, and I think probably, I mean, the story with Gayan is really surprising. And, you know, of all the technology that we're talking about on this podcast, there's a real human element to that. I mean, she was really, you could just tell, really impacting her and her livelihood, which is the thing. You can't forget those sort of human stories behind all of this technology. I was most surprised by Peter, though. I've got to say, I kind of, in my head, I think, had Peter down as never going to try it, never going to be as good at what I can do. But he was, you know, he kind of surprised me. He was pretty open-minded about it, the fact that he'd tried it and stuff.
I know what you mean, James, but also I think when you have got a kind of a renowned, famous voice, it does put you in a slightly different position. You know, Peter's clearly, you know, worked hard his whole career, but that voice could play on and on and on. And I think it's just a different point of view when you haven't got that level of fame in whatever you do. It is completely fascinating, though, hearing the three different viewpoints and the ethical concerns related to them all. And I guess that's what we're here to do. We're here to explore AI, as we've said before, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I think that's kind of what we just got there.
The last thing I would say is no one shut it down completely and said shouldn't be doing it. I mean, even Gayan, in the situation that she's in, made the point that, yeah, look, I've been burnt here, but I don't think on the whole it's a bad thing at all, and we shouldn't be doing this stuff. And interestingly, none of them did that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd kind of be a little bit foolish to completely ignore AI. I mean, that's what we're here to talk about every week, isn't it? It's changing the world, and we've got to get used to it and adapt to it. But right now, James, are you ready for the latest AI challenge?
Yes.
You said that with some determination.
It was intrepidation.
Yes. You are currently leading, or am I leading?
No, 2-0.
Are you sure that you're leading?
Yeah, of course, it's 2-0.
Okay, James is currently leading 2-0.
I mean, 3, and it really starts to get away from you. It's not going to be hard to come
Things
back
are changing
three.
Today. James and I going head-to-head in the AI challenge, where we have to try and distinguish what's real from what is AI. And over to tell us more with this week's challenge is our beautifully, wonderfully talented, incredible, according to Gemini, Google's AI. But am I right, James? Molly!
Hey, thank you, I think. So this week's AI challenge is very in line with the episode topic of voiceovers.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So I've got a piece of audio here. There's five voiceovers in this. One of them's a real person. You have to tell me who is the real person.
Oh, just one's real.
It's just harder. One is real.
It's harder. Genius. Than I thought. Goodness.
Okay. Ears open.
AI haven't a clue, with George Butler and James Chandler making sense of the weird, wonderful, sometimes overwhelming world of AI.
AI haven't a clue, with George Butler and James Chandler making sense of the weird, wonderful, and sometimes overwhelming world of AI.
AI haven't a clue, with George Butler and James Chandler making sense of the weird, wonderful, and sometimes overwhelming world of AI.
AI haven't a clue, with George Butler and James Chandler making sense of the weird, wonderful, and sometimes overwhelming world of AI.
AI haven't a clue, with George Butler and James Chandler making sense of the weird, wonderful, and sometimes overwhelming world of AI.
Wow.
Oh my word.
Wow.
I mean,
all good.
No, disagree on that. I'd say some of them are good.
I loved how she said my name in that number five, James Chandler. Oh, that's fantastic.
You see, I thought there was two or three there where I went, no. No. They were all right, but there was two or three that I thought, no, AI bot all day.
The fourth one was like a sort of talk to Frank, or like a, it was like public service announcement. There was some urgency about it. All the intonation was wrong, so I'm discarding four.
Are there any others that you're discarding straight off the bat? Because I'm with you, four's gone for me.
If I turn it on its head, three, the intonation was different from the rest of them. So if I were to put my chips on something, it would be on number three, is the human voice.
That's really interesting.
What are you saying?
I definitely think three is artificial intelligence.
Do you really?
I'm okay. Very torn between one and five. I think they, to me, felt the most real. She was very posh, but she had a real warmth to
her
voice.
There was something in it.
I am going to say it's voice number one.
Voice number one?
Yeah.
Voice number three?
Lock it in.
The answer was, the real person was voice number three.
Oh! Georgie! 3-0. That is a lot, isn't it?
Can we hear voice number three one more time?
Wow.
AI haven't a clue, with George Butler and James Chandler making sense of the weird, wonderful, and sometimes overwhelming world of AI.
Wowee! Whoa!
I did ask him to sound AI, like pretend you're AI.
Oh, well, thank you, Molly.
So
that's...
No, it's okay.
That's something, isn't it?
I have to say, fairly devastated about that. I mean, embarrassed...
Oh,
so as you could tell, James is a little bit happy.
And you're around voiceover people all the time. I mean, this is maybe too much. I don't know.
Would you look at that? I think it's all we've got time for today on AI Having a Clue. Perhaps we'll be back next time. Perhaps I'll quit in a fit of rage and embarrassment. I could never do that. A big thanks to the brilliant minds behind this podcast, Molly Carter and David May.
A massive thank you to our trio of voiceover artists this week, Gayon Potter, who obviously we wish all the best with that ongoing case, the brilliant and quite legendary Peter Dixon, and of course, to Casey Logan as well.
We shall be back next time with another edition. Of course, please do keep your questions coming in if you have one for James, and follow us on your socials, LinkedIn, TikTok and Instagram. That's enough plugs. James, see us out, please.
Wonderful. Desperately happy. Don't forget to stay curious. Ha ha! Ha ha!